It was mid-afternoon when they pulled into the kitchen yard at Dragon's Fountain. Servants and dogs came pouring from the kitchen and outbuildings to give them a riotous welcome. And when at last Isabella escaped to her own room, Nanny was already running her bath and unpacking her three suitcases. "Goddamn bushed, Nanny. I'm going to sleep for a week." "Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain," Nanny warned her darkly. "Oh, don't come that with me, Nanny. You're a Muslim." "We got the same rules," Nanny sniffed haughtily. "Where are all the men?" Isabella flopped onto the bed. "Out hunting, of course." "Are there any nice ones, Nanny?" "Yes, but they're all married." "You should have brought your own, Miss Bella." Nanny paused. "Come to think of it, there is a new one that got no wife." Then she shook her head. "But you won't like him."
"Why not?"
"He got no hair on his head," Nanny cackled merrily. "Ha! What you call an eggshell blonde." Nanny was correct. He didn't tickle Isabella's fancy, although he had a kind and rather sensitive face and beautiful Jewish slow eyes. His bald head was a damper. It was tanned and freckled like a plover's egg, with a thick fringe of dark curls around the back, in the style of Friar Tuck. He was talking to Gary on the wide front stoop. Isabella felt good when she came down for pre-dinner cocktails. She had managed an hour's sleep after the hot bath. She was wearing a deceptively simple blue silk sheath with a risqué décolletage whose cunning cut and drape caught the eye of every man present, married or not. She went to Gary immediately. She hadn't seen him for months. "My big teddy bear." She hugged him. With his arms still around her waist, Gary introduced them. "Bella, this is Professor Aaron Friedman. Aaron, this is my baby sister, Senator Dr. Isabella Courtney." "Oh, come on, Gary," she protested modestly at his use of all her titles, and took Aaron Friedman's hand. It was fine-boned but strong, the hands of a pianist or a surgeon. "Aaron is on a sabbatical from the University of Jerusalem."
"Oh, I love Jerusalem," Isabella told him politely.
"In fact, I love Israel. It's such an exciting, vibrant country, so steeped in history and religion." She gave him another minute of her attention, and then she moved down the veranda to find her father. He had three of the prettiest wives grouped around him, giggling at his wit. "My beautiful daddy," she kissed him, and then took her place beside him, with her arm linked through his in a proprietorial fashion. She knew just how good they looked together. As usual, the two of them swiftly became the centre of the little elegant gathering. They sipped their champagne and laughed and chatted and flirted, while a flamboyant Karoo sunset lit the gaunt copies with a ruddy glow and set the clouds on fire. One of the men mentioned casually, "I was listening to the radio while I dressed. It seems that the Ethiopians have forced Haile Selassie to abdicate." "Oh, damned fuzzy-wuzzies, bunch of bandits and shufta," said another. "I was there with the 6th Division during the war. We went the hard way, on foot, while Shaza was swanning around in his hurricane." Shaza touched the black eye patch. "We called it Abyssinia then. We went to keep an eye on them, and dashed if I didn't leave one of mine behind." They laughed, and somebody else remarked, "Haile Selassie was a marvellous old fellow, really. I wonder what'll happen now." "Ah, the same as the rest of Black Africa. Chaos and confusion and communism. Murder and mayhem and Marxism." There was a general murmur of agreement, and they dismissed the subject and turned their attention to the splendour of the final moments of the sunset. The night fell with the suddenness of a stage curtain, and immediately the evening chill struck through their light clothing. With perfect timing, the dinner gong chimed. Santon rose from her seat at the end of the veranda, to lead the entire party through the French windows into the long dining room, where candlelight glinted on silver and crystal, and polished walnut glowed with a precious antique lustre. Isabella found her place card and checked those on each side of her. Gary and Aaron Friedman. Damn, she thought. She had noticed him mooning after her ever since Gary had introduced them. It was natural that Nana would pair her with the only single male in the company. Aaron hurried across to hold her chair for her. As he seated her, she set herself the task of being pleasant. She soon discovered that he was a delightful conversationalist, with a droll sense of humour that amused her. She no longer noticed his bald head. Gary had been occupied with his dinner partner, but now he turned and leant forward to speak to Aaron across Isabella.
"By the way, Aaron, if you really have got to be back in Pelindaba by Monday afternoon, I'll fly you up in the Lear."
As the significance of the casual mention of that name struck her, Isabella felt her cheeks chill. The Nuclear Research Institute was based at Pelindaba.
"Are you all right, Bella?"
Gary was watching her with concern.
"Of course I am."
"Oh, for a moment you looked quite strange."
"Oh, nonsense, Gary, you're imagining things." But she was thinking furiously as Gary and Aaron made their arrangements. By the time Gary turned his attention back to his own partner, she had gathered herself.
"I have neglected to ask what discipline you teach, Professor."
"Won't you call me Aaron, Doctor?"
She smiled. "Only if you call me Isabella, Professor."
"I am a physicist, Isabella, a nuclear physicist. Very boring, I'm afraid."
"Well, that's not fair on yourself, Aaron." She touched his wrist lightly. "It's the science of the future, in war and in peace." Still touching him, she turned one shoulder and leant towards him so that the sheer silk of her décolletage fell away from her bosom. She wore no bra. When his eyes changed their direction of gaze and opened very wide, she knew that he was staring at her nipple. She gave him 2 seconds before she straightened up, ending the show, and she lifted her fingers from his wrist. In those 2 seconds, Aaron Friedman had undergone a profound change. He was now a man bewitched.
"Where is your wife, Aaron?" she asked.
My wife and I were divorced almost 5 years ago."
"Oh, I'm so sorry."
She lowered her voice to a husky murmur and let her sympathy show in her eyes, staring deeply into his. Later that evening, while preparing for bed, Isabella sat in front of her dressing table and regarded herself in the mirror as she creamed away the last traces of her makeup.
"Israel Pelindaba, nuclear physics," she murmured.
"It just has to add up to one big bang." Not a month had passed, during the past 2 years, in which she had not been able to send some intelligence to her masters. Most of it was routine reports and minutes of meetings, but this could at last hasten her next meeting with Nicholas. During dinner, Aaron had professed a great love of horses and riding, but then he would probably have declared a fascination with polar exploration and munching razor blades if he thought that was what she wanted to hear. She would soon see how well he sat a horse. They had a date to ride out at dawn tomorrow morning.
"How far will you go?"
Isabella asked herself in the mirror. She thought about it carefully before she answered.
"Well, he is terribly amusing and quite sweet, and they do say that men with bald heads have a tremendous libido."
She pulled a face at herself in the mirror.
"You're a terrible little tart, aren't you? A regular Mata Hari."
When she was 14 years old, her brother Sean had taught her a smutty rhyme about Mata Hari.
How did it go?
She cast her mind back.
"She learnt the location of a very secret station on the point of a mission in the 23rd position."
When she had asked him what emission meant, Sean had sniggered dirtily and darkly. She had been obliged to look it up in the dictionary, which didn't do much to clarify the issue. She smiled at her unintended pun.
"Would you actually go that far?" she demanded of herself and grinned again. "Well, perhaps not as far as the 23rd. The second or third position should do the trick quite nicely."
Beneath the flippancy, she knew she would do anything for Nicky and Ramon. Dawn was still only a pale promise in the east when she went down to the stables the following morning, but already Aaron was waiting for her. He wore jodhpurs and riding boots. That he had his own riding gear was encouraging. The syce was already walking the saddled horses. The animals at Dragon's Fountain were seldom exercised sufficiently, and there were always fields full of lucerne and oats irrigated from the spring. They were usually full of pep. However, she had ordered the quietest old gelding in the stables for Aaron. She hoped he could manage him, and she watched uneasily as he approached his mount. She need not have worried. Aaron went up in the saddle, and she saw immediately that he had a good solid seat and gentle hands. They skirted the kopje as the sun burst over the horizon. It was cool enough to make her grateful for the waxed cotton barber hacking jacket she wore. The still air had that peculiar desert lambency that made her believe that she could see to the very ends of the earth. The vultures left their shaggy nests in the rock cliff above them and soared on wide, graceful wings overhead. Out on the plain, the springbok herds were still nervous and jittery from the previous day's hunting. In their alarm, they erected the snowy plumes of mane from the pouches of skin along their spines and flashed them in the bright morning sunlight as they blew away, lightly as smoke, into the purple blossoming sage. The sweet, clean air seemed to fizz like champagne in her head, and she felt gay and reckless. Once the horses had warmed up, Isabella urged her mare into a gallop and led them on a wildly exhilarating charge along the old dry riverbed and down to the dam. Huge flocks of Egyptian geese rose honking from the muddy brown water as they reined up on the bank. Isabella slid from the saddle and dabbed in theatrical distress at her eye with the end of her silk scarf. Aaron tumbled from the saddle with gratifying concern. "Are you all right, Isabella? I seem to have something in my eye. May I look?" She turned her face up to him. He cupped it gently in his hands and stared into her eye. "I don't see anything." She blinked her long, dark lashes, and the early sunlight splintered into myriad pinpoints of pure sapphire in the depths of her iris. "Are you sure?" she asked. His breath was sweet, and his body odour was clean and manly. She stared back into his eyes. They were dark and shining as burnt wild honey. He touched her lower lid, gently massaging the eyeball through the skin. "How does that feel?" he asked, and she blinked again. "You have a magic touch. That's much better, thank you." And she kissed him with wet and open lips. Aaron shuddered with shock, then recovered swiftly and seized her round the waist. She pressed her hips forward and let him explore the inside of her mouth with his tongue for a few seconds. Then the moment she felt the flare of his loins, she broke away. "I'll race you back to the stables." She laughed her husky, sexy laugh at him and went up into the saddle with a lithe bound. The gelding was no match for her chestnut mare, and besides, she had 200 yards start. Over the next 3 days, she made Aaron Friedman's life an exquisite torment. She touched his thigh under the dinner table. She let him have a good grope while they were playing water polo in the swimming pool that was fed directly from the spring. Innocently, she adjusted her bikini top in front of him while they lay on the lawn, and he read Shelley to her. When he helped her up into the back of the hunting Land Rover, she gave him a glimpse of the transparent Janet Rager panties that she had donned for the occasion. When they danced on the veranda, she rotated and oscillated her hips in lewd and lazy circles. Trapped between them was something that felt like the handle of a cricket bat. On the night before he left Dragon's Fountain to fly back to the Transvaal with Gary, she allowed him to see her up to her room and say good night to her in the corridor outside the door of her suite. Without breaking the kiss, he manoeuvred her until her back was pressed firmly against the wall and her skirt was up around her waist. Once he hit his stride, he was really rather masterful. Isabella liked that and soon found she was almost as breathless as he was. She didn't really want him to stop. Her first impression had been intuitive. With those fingers, he should have been a concert pianist. His touch was light and artistic. Unwittingly, she found herself on the very threshold. "Won't you leave your door unlocked tonight?" he whispered into her ear. With an effort, she roused herself from a trance of lust and pushed him away. "Are you crazy?" she whispered back, smoothing down her skirt with trembling fingers. "The house is crawling with my family. My father, my brother, my grandmother, my nanny." "Yes, I'm going crazy. You're driving me mad. I love you. I want you. It's torture, Bella. I can't go on like this." "I know," she said. "Me too. I'll come up to Johannesburg." "When?" "Oh, tell me when, my darling." "I'll telephone you. Leave me your number." Isabella was serving on the Senate Committee of Inquiry into Civil Service Pensions. She and the two other members of the committee were taking evidence in the Transvaal the following month. She drove up to Johannesburg in the Porsche. She stayed with Gary and Holly in their lovely new home in Santon, and telephoned Aaron at the Pelindaba Institute the morning she arrived. She drove out to fetch him, and they dined at a chic little restaurant. Over the crayfish cocktails, she sounded him out discreetly about his work at the Nuclear Research Institute. "Oh, it's all terribly boring, really. Antiparticles and quarks." He was genially evasive. "Did you know that the name originated from a James Joyce quotation? 'Three quarks for muster mark'? And should be pronounced quart?" "How fascinating." She touched his thigh under the table, and he seized her hand. "What you do must be very hard," she said.
"Yes."
He moved her fingers a few inches higher.
"It is, rather."
"I see what you mean." She widened her eyes. "Do you really want to go dancing after dinner?"
"We could go back to my place for coffee."
"I'm not all that hungry. The crayfish was very filling." "Let's skip the second course," she suggested.
"Waiter, the bill, please."